We are holding on Nunzayan Umud Bey, the fifth line of the medium size lines. We were learning about, we've been talking about today. First, the last thing we talked about was that there was a case where Shimon ben Chalafta had a chicken whose thigh got dislocated. Now, we were talking about the whole machlokas, whether a dislocated thigh in a bird is going to be trefa or not. We said in an animal, it can be, we said actually a few days ago that an animal, if the nive, the ligaments that hold that, if the ligaments that hold that hold it together have gotten decayed, then it's trefa. With a bird, we talked about, is it the same thing? Would it be even if they're not decayed, etc.? But we also had different opinions that said that it is in fact mutter. So we said, well, what about Rav Shimon Chalafta was able to cure his chicken with this treferas shokana? He used like a reed, a tube of reed as like a splint or something for it, and it recovered. But we said that no, it actually didn't necessarily live 12 months afterwards. And as we're going to talk about in the Gemara soon, a trefer can't live for 12 months. So now the Gemara continues, having talked about Rav Shimon Chalafta and his like experiment with this as far as curing the chicken. So the Gemara talks about some other examples of him and his experiments. So the Gemara says, Omru Olav, Rav Shimon Chalafta, they said about Rav Shimon Chalafta, Sha'askan b'dvarim hoya, that he would busy himself with different things, that he would actually do experiments to try to work things out, to see whether something in fact happens. So one example of this is trying to cure his chicken with a splint. So one example is one time he did something to demonstrate not like Rabbi Yehuda. We learned in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda had said in Mithlan Notza Psula that if the notza, the downy feathers of a bird, are gone, then the bird is trefa, because then it's not going to be able to then it's not going to be able to live. So we said the Tanakhama had said that it's fine. But Rabbi Yehuda had said that the downy feathers are gone. So we talked about basically it's kind of the equivalent of gluda of an animal that was skin was flayed off. Anyway, so what did Rabbi Shimon Chalafta do? So we're trying to go with Hoysala, Rabbi Shimon Chalafta, Chenitla Noitzishallah. So Rabbi Shimon Chalafta had a chicken, which lost all of its feathers like that. It lost downy feathers. The Nicha Batanur, so Rav Shimon ben Chalafta put the bird in the oven, in order to warm it up, basically. Now, not obviously the oven wouldn't be heated up enough to burn it, but the Tolal of a Matlas Shal Tausiyim. He wrapped it up in a cloth used by Tausiyim. Tausiyim means copper workers, people who are coppersmiths. So Rashi describes this is a cloth that they would use when they're busy working with copper. You have little bits of copper are gonna go here and there. So you would take a leather piece and you'd put it over there to catch those extra pieces. So between the fact it's hot because it's thick, it retains its heat because of its thickness, and also the fact that it's always used for copper makes it hot. So that way, in other words, it would help preserve the on the one hand, it would protect the chicken from the effect of the heat of the oven, but it would also help insulate it so that the heat that it does absorb would be retained. Chickens, by the way, have a bit of a higher body temperature than people. So this kind of thing might not have worked for an animal or for a person, but it would work for a chicken, which has a bit of a higher body temperature. Tosfos points out that the word tausiyim, here we're explaining, it means coppersmiths. We actually have some other places in the Gemara where it has a different meaning. It means weavers, and in addition, it also means a place called Tausi. It seems, in other words, that Tosfos says this is one of those words that has multiple meanings. Maybe it's spelt slightly differently or pronounced slightly differently. Whatever the case, Rav Shimon Chalafta here tausiyim means coppersmiths. So Rav Shimon Chalafta took this piece of leather that they use in their coppersmithing and wrapped the chicken in it. Rabbi Gershom and then Oruch bring a different explanation that it's more like an apron that the smith himself wears. In any case, so he did that. He wrapped up the chicken in that, put it in the oven. And it worked. But so the gidlok nafayim hachronim yosim in hodeshonim, and it grew feathers bigger, and it grew feathers bigger than the ones that it had to begin with. So therefore, so Reb Shimon Chalapa said, well, that shows, therefore, so since we've been having a general rule until now that a trefa is only where it's not going to live, and if it's curable, then it's not a trefa, we've had examples of that several times already, then Reb Shimon Chalapa took that experiment of his to indicate, so therefore, obviously, a chicken that loses its feathers is not trefa yet, not like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, why? Fine, but maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds that a trefa is actually able to improve in health. Who says? We're assuming all this time that a trefa, first of all, is going to die within a certain amount of time, fine, 30 days or 12 months, as we talked about before. But also there's the question, once an animal or a bird becomes trefa, is its health ever going to improve? Maybe, in fact, that Rabbi Yehuda would hold that, and we're going to talk about it at the bottom of the Amud, whether in fact a trefa can improve in health. Eventually, fine, it may die from the trefa, but meanwhile, it may get bigger and fatter or whatever. So what if it grew new feathers? What does that show? And the Gemara says, in Cain, yeah, but if so, midi de mitrefa ba, it's the very same thing that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that it would become trefa by losing its feathers. And he would say that it gets bigger feathers than it had before. In other words, fine. You could say, in other words, that fine, an animal or a bird becomes trefa in one part of its body. There might be some other part of the body that improves, that improves and fattens or improves in health or whatever temporarily. But here, for points of Yehuda, the very same feathers that make it trefa are the very same ones you're going to say that now it grew new ones. It's not logical. Therefore, Rav Shimon ben Chalapta took that to mean. So in came the midi the mitrefa bohig dilok nafayim achronim yesim erizdonim. Would the logic be that the very same thing that it became trefa with, it now improved and grew bigger feathers than the other? So that would show that the halacha is not in fact like Rabbi Yehuda based on Rabbi Shimon Chalapta's experiment. So in fact, in general, the poskim do hold, as we've learned before, not like Rabbi Yehuda, and they hold that if the bird is missing its feathers, then it's not trefa because of that. With that said, though, the Rama does bring from the Trumas Hadeshin that maybe we should be cautious for it if all the feathers fell out. Maybe if only some of them, or we said also if they fell out because the brood was fat, then one thing. But not more than that. So that's an example of Rav Shimon ben Chalapta and his experiments. So the Gemara says, "My askan bedvarim." Why are we calling him an askan in the first place? In other words, the implication sounds like, to begin with, it sounds like all this time he was always an askan, and one time he did this experiment to verify about the Tanakhama against Rabbi Yehuda. But it sounds like he regularly did this kind of thing. In fact, also, and so the word askan suggests somebody who does this kind of thing regularly. Another point is also, for example, with these things that we've talked about, we wouldn't call him askan bedvarim because of that, because to find out the halacha, askan bedvarim suggests that he's an experimenter, even when it's not negay la halacha. So where do we see an example of that, of him doing experiments, even where it's not relevant to halacha? So Amra Mishaushia Dikhtiv, like this. You have a pasuk in Mishlei where Shlomo says, Lech el Nemala Otzel, you lazy person, go to the ant and observe what the ant does. Re'edrachaha, see its ways, v'hacham, and become wise by doing that. And what's so great about the ant? Asherim lakotzin shoter umoshel. It has no leader, no policeman, and no ruler. And yet, tochen b'kayitz lachma, and yet it prepares its food during the summertime. It's never lazy. It's always moving around and preparing for the future. So therefore, you lazy person, take a lesson from that. It means partially begashmius, in other words, don't just sit around and not have a job. It means beruchnius, prepare for right now. You're in the summertime of your neshama when you're in this world and you have an opportunity to do mitzvahs. So be doing that. Be learning Torah now. Be doing mitzvahs now. So you have for what later on when your neshama is in the olam ha'emes and is not going to be able to do these kinds of things before. You're not going to be able to do these kinds of things. So take your opportunity and do it now. So Omar, Sereb Shimon Chalaka, says to himself, Ezel Echzi Ivade Hu Deles Lo Malka. Let me see whether indeed it's so that they have no king, as Shloima says. Now, Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara in Bava Basra where Rabbi Yochanan says something about what's going to be L'Osid Lavoi, and a Talmud makes fun of him and says, how is this possible? And eventually he goes and sees that it is actually possible, and he comes back to Rabbi Yochanan and says, I observed it with my own eyes, and Rabbi Yochanan says, that's wrong of you to do that. You can't mock and criticize and then say, yeah, but I saw it with my own eyes. So the question is, how is Rav Shimon Chalakta doing that? So Tosfos says, because he's not mocking it or anything. He wants to find out. Well, let's reconstruct. How indeed did Shlomo figure this out in the first place that they have no king? Then Yoyod also points out that, look, you know, so in other words, so first of all, Marasha says, look, I mean, what's the question? Of course, Shlomo said it with Ruach HaKodesh. But no, the thing is, Marsha brings from Chavis Alavavis, that no, it's true, but nevertheless, things that are Amunah, things of Amunah, even though you learned them to Kabbalah, it is still good to investigate them and try to find logical proofs for them. So in other words, you're not, unlike that Talmud with Rabbi Yechon, in other words, where he was mocking, he wouldn't believe it until he saw it. Of course I believe it, but I also am going to try to find a place for it in Seichel. So that's what Rabbi Shimon Chalakta is going to do. And Yoda also adds the point, look, the whole Sefer Mishle is basically Mishalim, it's basically parables and analogies, which is why the Sefer is called that. So he wants to know, does Shlomo actually literally mean that the ants have no king or whatever, or is he just using that metaphorically? Okay. So also with Tkufas Tammuz, so Rabbi Shimon Chalakta went during Tkufas Tammuz, during the heat of the summer. Now, ants and many kinds of insects, many kinds of creatures in general, will stay out of the sun because it's too hot for them. They can't take it. By the way, yet another answer that a number of Achronim give, the Maharam Shif and some others give an answer also, since Shlomo himself says, Leich el Namala, go to the ant. So Shlomo, in effect, is giving you permission. Go ahead, see for yourself that the ants have no king. Okay, so also with Tkufas Tammuz, they went into Tkufas Tammuz during the heat of the summer, and animals, and especially insects, will often stay out of the sun during that time, because it's too much for them. He took his coat and spread it over an anthill, to make it look like it's nighttime, or it's shady. Nofak also chadminai, who soon enough, one ant came out of the anthill, out of the nest. Asnach Beisimona, so at that point Rav Shimon Chalakta made a simon on this ant so that he should be able to recognize it afterwards, because he wants to be able to see what happens with this ant. So he made a mark on it. So now the ant goes back in, Omalahu, and he says to the other ants, now of course Rav Shimon Chalakta doesn't understand ant language and he can't see what's going on inside the anthill, but we can imagine, in other words, if he goes back inside, he's telling them, Nafal Tula, it's shady, it's safe to come out. Nafuva Osu, so all the ants started coming out. Dalyula Glime, now at this point Rav Shimon Chalakta took away his cloak, and now it's sunny over there, Nafal Shimsha, now the sun came shining down on them again. Nofale, the Kafle, all the ants all attacked this one ant, which now he was able to recognize it because the mark he had put on it, the Kafle, and they killed that ant. Omar, so now Rav Shimon Chalakta says to himself, Shmamina Leslahu Malka, this definitively proves that they have no king. The Islahu, because if they have a king, Hamona de Malka Lolibo, shouldn't they have to ask permission from the king before they kill one of them? In other words, why they're killing him? Because he endangered the colony. If he lied to them, he tricked them, he's pretending as though it's shady outside when really it's sunny, and now they all go out in the sun and they're going to get harmed by the heat. So they're killing him for the good of the colony. But Rav Shimon Chalakta says, fine, shouldn't they have to ask permission before they do that? So that shows, the fact that they didn't ask permission shows they have no king. However, Omalei Rav Acha Breid Rav Lo Rav Ashi. But Rav Acha Breid Rav says to Rav Ashi, is that really a solid proof? V'doma Malka Hava Ba'adayu. Maybe the king, maybe the ruler was actually going. Now, of course, ants have a queen, have a queen ant, but that's something else. The queen over there is not the ruler. The queen is just the one who lays all the eggs. Maybe their leader, maybe they do have a leader, maybe the leader was in fact with them, and therefore he decided the case on the spot, that this guy has endangered the colony, and we have to kill him. Inami Hamona DeMarco Havanakiki. Or maybe they had a standing order from the king that at any time anybody who lies and endangers the colony is going to be killed. Inami Ben Malka LaMalka, or maybe it was between kings. Maybe the previous king, maybe the previous ruler had died and the ants hadn't had a chance to appoint yet. To appoint one yet. Yechtiven, we see that by human beings, you have that kind of thing also. By Yom Rahim and Melech Yisrael, in those times, during the period of the Shoftim, there was no king among the Jewish people. Isha Yosheba Einav Yaseh, each person does what's right in his own eyes. So therefore, so maybe, so in other words, that's the normal way that it should be. When there's no king, then you rely on people to do the right thing. So therefore, maybe the ants are doing like that. An interesting thing, by the way, is we usually take that pasuk Ish HaYosheh Be'Einav Yaseh to be many of them mafarshim take it in a very negative sense. Because there was no king, people did whatever was right in their eyes, and therefore there was anarchy. But you actually see from this Gemara and also from a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that maybe not so. Maybe actually this kind of thing Ish HaYosheh Be'Einav Yaseh can be a very positive thing, that there can be a time like that when we can rely on people to do the right thing without there being a central government. Now, of course, it's not always so. We have in Pirkei Avos that sometimes you have Ishus Re'u Chaim Bloy. One person will swallow the other one up alive. But nevertheless, we see that maybe there are times, depending on what kind of society it is, when that kind of thing can be a positive and good thing. And so we're saying maybe the ants do that. By the way, Marashah points out in this connection, as far as the ants, Shloima says, Re'ei Drachecha, see its ways in plural, v'chacham, and then be wise. What's the ways in plural? So first of all, no ant, even the laziest one, relies on the other. He doesn't want to have any kind of gzela. But also, then we have. So then the Drachecha is, first of all, that it prepares its food during the summertime, and number two, that even the lazy ones do that, and they don't want to do Gezel. Also, Drachecha includes what we're saying over here, that they love the truth, and they're ready on the spot to punish anybody who will lie, and anybody who will lie to them, as they just did. But anyway, the point is that so Rav Acha Brei Derava points out that Rav Shimon ben Chalafta's experiment is not really so ironclad proof that they don't have a king. Maybe, in fact, maybe they have the king with them, or maybe they have a standing order from the king, or maybe right now they have to run things in the absence of a king. Ella, so fine, the bottom line, smoicha heminus de Shloima, you have to rely on Shloima's reliability. You can be sure that Shloima figured out, whether, as Marashah says, with Ruach HaKodesh or in other ways, that, in fact, they really do have no king, because, in fact, it's true that this... It's true that this experiment is not really such an ironclad proof. Okay, but in any case, that kind of thing, Rav Shimon Chalafta was an experimenter like that, and for that we call him Askan B'Dvarim. So we have now three experiments that he did. One was this one with the ants, another one was with his chicken with the dislocated leg where he splinted it and it recovered, at least for a period of time, and the third one was about the chicken that lost its feathers and he wrapped it up and put it in the oven and it grew new feathers. Fine. Let's talk more generally about what happens with a tray for animal or bird. Yeah.
One question. The fact that Gemara discusses and doesn't condemn him for experimenting, the Gemara could have said, well, you're wrong because Shlomo HaMelech had Ruach HaKodesh. Why did you experiment? Why you didn't believe?
Well, that's what we were just saying. That's what we were just saying before. That Tosfos wonders that when you have that example of a Talmud who mocked what Rabbi Yochanan said and wouldn't believe it until he saw it with his own eyes, why don't we say the same thing about Rabbi Shimon Chalafta? So that's what we were saying. A couple of answers. Tosfos himself says. That the answer is, he's trying to reconstruct, how did Shloima know this in the first place? So in other words, with the Talmud and Rabbi Yochanan, he's not saying, Rabbi Yochanan, how do you know this? He's mocking. He says, I don't believe it until he sees it with his own eyes. Rabbi Shimon Chalafta says, of course I believe Shloima. The question is, how did Shloima himself know it? I'd like to figure that out. That was a point to him. According to Marashah, the point of the question.
Well, that's not relevant. No, what's relevant is wondering, can you experiment with halacha and change halacha?
Hold on. This isn't halacha.
It's the experimental. One second. Yeah. Let me finish my question.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. The relevance is this. Can experimentation reverse halacha? I'm not saying you didn't believe Shlomo HaMelech, but the Gemara doesn't seem to condemn that. So go ahead.
First of all, with the ants, it's not a matter of halacha. But the ant is not a matter of halacha at all. But as far as the other two, as far as the feathers and as far as the leg, both of those we said are things of machloikas. We said as far as the feathers, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue. So Rav Shimon Chalafka himself, being a Tana, says, I want to be able to do an experiment and demonstrate that the halacha should be like the Chachamim. So in other words, the idea is we can't use. In other words, the idea would be that if everybody agreed, for example, that a chicken losing its feathers is going to be tshefa, then it wouldn't matter what experiments we make to the contrary. But once we have, there are in fact different opinions on the subject, then Rav Shimon Chalafka is entitled to say, well, then let me do an experiment to see whether it fits better with one opinion or the other. And the same thing as far as the chicken with the as far as the chicken with the broken leg, they are actually, in fact, some Mefarshim explained that he didn't even do it to begin with. Other members of his household. Others of his household did it. They saw a chicken that had a dislocated leg. Somebody got the idea to try to splint it and see if they could cure it. But not necessarily that he personally did that. But yeah, as far as this one with the ants, yes. So again, Tosfos says the vote is that he's not denying what Shloima says. He's curious how Shloima himself knew this. Marsha says the vote is not so much that, but rather that it's true. Even when you have something that you learned by emuna, that we believe on faith, nevertheless, as the Chovas Halavava says, it is good to also find a logical basis for it. And then you have other points as well. Then you have your other point that he wants to know, is Shloima actually just saying this as a mushal, or does he mean it's literally true? I mean, he's saying it as a mushal, of course, but is it actually literally true, or is Shloima just using it as a figure of speech? And you have some emotion, since Shloima himself says leich mo to the ant, then that implies that Shloima himself is giving you permission. Go ahead and check out what I'm saying, and you get it for yourself. So we have several differences, but yeah, as far as the general question of whether experiment can change halacha, so first of all, you know, we talked about at the beginning of this perek that we have various conditions of the ones that it mentions in our perek where modern science will tell us they're not fatal, or vice versa, conditions that modern science will tell us is and aren't. There we say that doesn't matter because the halacha has been established already. But here, in Rav Shimon Chalafka's times, for example, as far as the feathers, the halacha had not yet been established, so Rav Shimon is entitled to do an experiment to see whether to see if we can use that to uphold one opinion or the other.
Did the Chachamim ever say that the earth was flat?
I don't know. There are gemaras that can be taken to mean that the earth is flat. There are gemaras that can be taken to mean that the earth is round. I don't know that we have anything that's definitive one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on. Amar Rav Huna, simin l'treifa yud beis chodesh. Rav Huna says a simen, whether an animal is trefa, is if it lives 12 months. So if we have an animal that's a suffix, whether it became trefa, so we can't do this with a vade trefa, but with a suffix, where you have a case of a suffix, whether an animal is trefa, see, if it lives afterwards 12 months, then you know that it's not a trefa. So the Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, simen of trefa, kosha eni yeledes. A simen of a trefa is if the animal does not give birth. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm a mashvachas vahilachas. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, if its health continues to improve, its health and continues to gain weight or whatever, then you know, then you know that it's kosher. Misnavna vahilachas, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says, if its health is deteriorating over time, then you know that it's trefa. Now, Tosfos points out, we don't mean that if an animal doesn't give birth, it's automatically trefa. Obviously, there are animals that don't give birth for any number of reasons, but we mean the other way around. If it gives birth, then according to the Tanna Kamma, that would demonstrate that it's not trefa, because if it was trefa, it would be impossible for it to give birth. Achronim points out, Marshall, and talks about that it doesn't mean that the animal may well become pregnant. It just won't be able to carry successfully to term and to have the baby if in fact it is a trefa. Although there are Mephoshim who disagree with that and say that maybe it can't even become pregnant. So the Gemara continues, so the Braita continues, Rebbe Yom is simen l'treifa shloshim yom. Rebbe says it's not 12 months. The simen for a treifa is if it can't live for 30 days. Amruloi, but they said to Rebbe, how is that? Baloi habib miskaimus shtaimus shaloshonim. You have many times when you have an animal that was a treifa, or at least a suffix treifa, that lives for 2 or 3 years. Now, so in other words, we have at the beginning of the Perek, we talked about the question, Trefa Chaya or Trefa Eina Chaya? Does a, you know, can a Trefa live long term or not? So here the Chachamim are saying to Rebbe, we have examples of a Trefa, an animal that was injured was one of the things that makes it Trefa, and sometimes it can even live a couple of years. Sure, it'll die of whatever it is that made it Trefa, but what are you really telling us 30 days? Okay, so the Gemara points out, Tanoi, in fact, there is. So the question is, though, that Rav Huna had said 12 months, but the Braisa hadn't said anything about 12 months. We had, the Tanakama had said if it doesn't give birth. Rav Shimon Gamliel says if its health improves versus deteriorates. And Rebbe says 12 days, 30 days. So where does Rav Huna get 12 months from? The answer is Tanoyi. The answer is actually Machalukas Tanoyi. There is another opinion that says that in fact, it is 12 months, like Rav Huna says. The Tanya, as we learn in Braisa, over Gogolus, when it comes to a hole in the skull, now we've learned a few times already in the Perek that when there's a hole in the skull with a person or with an animal, then eventually it'll be, if the hole is large enough, then the animal will be trefa. In the case of the person, he also won't live very long. So Gogolus, abshi yesh for neck of echad aruch, if you have in it one long hole, or even if you have a lot of small holes, then those add up to the amount of a makdeach, which is a type of drill, which we've learned a few times in the Perek already, a machlokas b'sham and b'shilol, how much of the skull has to be missing in the case of a person for the skull to not be metame ba'oihel anymore, meaning that now the skull is not considered complete enough to be metame ba'oihel. So we had, the Shammai had said the size of a certain kind of drill that they used in the Bais Mikdash. The Sil had said the amount that it would, if you remove it from a living person's skull, they would die, and the Gemara points out, and we've learned before, that there's not really a much of a difference between them. Those two figures basically amounts to more or less the same thing. So now we're saying that if you have, so whether there's one big hole or whether there's a bunch of small holes, then they add together to make that amount, which Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel are saying is now considered an incomplete skull. And Amar Rabbi Yosi ben Hamashulam, Maisa Hoya Be'inbol, it happened in Inbol, the name of a place, the Echad Shenifchase Gogolta, there was a person, a living person, who there was a hole in his skull, the size of that makdeach, the size of that drill hole. But also a chiduk shokheruya, they made him. They took a piece of a dried pumpkin skin and covered the hole with it. V'choya, and he recovered. So therefore, again, this is an example of an experiment. Where Rabbi Yosi ben Hamasholem says, so you see that even a hole in that size should not be considered a fatal defect, and therefore even if the skull has a hole that size should be then later on when the guy dies, then he should still the skull should still be metame ba'oihel. And the Braisa continues. Omelot of Shimon Elazar, Mishom Raya. So Rav Shimon Elazar says, you bring a proof from there, you're Moisa Hamahava. Oh, yeah. Sure, that was during the summertime that he was able to temporarily be cured and the hole started closing up because they'd put a splint of a piece of pumpkin wine on it. The Kinshah Olav, you Moisa Tzina. But then when winter time came, Miyad Mest, and right away he died. Because in other words, sometimes, so Rashi explains, sometimes you'll have an injury which is aggravated by the cold, like this example. Sometimes you'll have an injury which is aggravated by the heat, would be other examples, which is why, therefore, so in other words, the Chachamim, so therefore, Rav Shimon Elazar says to Rav Yosi ben Hamashulam, the fact that this guy survived the summer with this patch over his skull doesn't mean that when it came the winter time, he died. So you need, in fact, for him to live, through all the seasons. So now Rav Huna is basing himself on that and saying, therefore, that a trefa needs to be able to live 12 months. If it lives through 12 months, meaning that it's lived through both the hot season and the cold season, both the summer and the winter, and the animal is still alive, then you can be sure that it's not trefa. So again, we can't use this when you have a vadai trefa, when you have an animal that definitely has one of the conditions that we've been learning throughout this parak that make it trefa. We can't say, well, we see that it's alive, so therefore it's good. That's the thing. That kind of experimentation, we can't go against halacha. But when you have a suffix, when to begin with you have a doubt, did this animal in fact suffer some kind of injury or some kind of blow or whatever that would make it trefa, then this kind of thing, whether it survives 12 months, Rav Huna says is a valid thing. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Abacha by Yaakov, halacha treifa yeledes mashbachas. The halacha is that a treifa animal would in fact be able to give birth and can indeed even improve in health. So in other words, the fact that you see it improving in health, or the fact that even you see it giving birth, does not necessarily show that it's not a treifa. You'd have to use other factors, such as whether it lives 12 months, to determine whether it's kosher or not. Now, that's not the last word on it. The Gemara continues by discussing this point. Amar Amemar, Chai Be'ed Trefa. When it comes to eggs from a Trefa bird, Shichala Kama Asura. The first clutch of eggs that it lays after it became Trefa are also. Because those were already, basically, when the bird became a Trefa, then those became a Trefa along with it, because they're considered part of its body. It's kind of like the baby is kind of the limb of the mother. After that, the next clutch of eggs that it starts developing, then you have a rooster that fertilizes the hen. So even if the hen became treifa, fine. Have a zevzeg gerdim. Then at this point you have a zevzeg gerdim. You have two factors that are contributing towards the formation of those eggs, the male and the female, and therefore mutter. Therefore, the next clutch of eggs would be mutter, because you have a rule when you have something that's also and something that's mutter together. Contribute to creating something, then it's mutter. The idea being, in other words, when a hen is fertilized, you have, or other birds like this also, that a bunch of eggs are fertilized together, and then it lays them, and then it lays them day by day. So now you have, in other words, that first clutch. They were always there. They were there at the time, already in its body. It's not Zeb Zegurim anymore. At the point then when the chicken became Trefa, they all became Trefa with it. But the next ones, the next clutch that are going to be created, are going to be kosher because Zeb Zegurim. Tosfos discusses about you have something when we do apply Zevazegurdim, where we're going to have later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about Choshish and Lazera Av. Do we take into consideration the father's genetic contribution? Tosfos says because here we're talking about one osur and one mutter, so therefore we do take that into consideration. However, the Gemara says Eisved of Ashi Ramema, but of Ashi says Tamema. What do you mean? We learn in a Mishnah the Shovin. They agree, who are the they, we'll talk about in a second, but Beit Tzreifa, by the eggs of a Tzreifa bird, Shasura, that would be also in Teshet Godla B'Isser, because it grew in Isser. Now Rashi explains that the Machloikas is, your Machloikas, where we're saying that they agree, Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim disagree about a Tzreifa animal that gave birth, whether the baby is kosher or not. So they would disagree about that, about the vlad of a treifa, but they would both agree that the egg of a treifa is also because God lo be'isser. According to Tosfos, though, we're not referring to a machloikus of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, which is to say Rabbi Yeshua, but rather we're referring to a machloikus of Shammai B'Hillel about Beitzas Nevela. If you have a Nevela, you have a bird that died without proper shchita, and then you find a fully formed egg in it, then it would be then you have a machloikus of Shammai and B'Hillel, whether it's Osir or Mutter, but then they would both agree by Beitzas Trefa because it grew B'Isser. In other words, the difference is when you have Beitzas Nevela. So up until now, the egg was perfectly beheter inside a live hen. Now the hen died from something other than proper shchita. But fine, the egg at that point is not developing anymore, and therefore there's no, according to Beis Shammai, it would be mutter. Whereas with a Beis Shreifa, it continued to grow inside the mother, and so eventually it's growing from a mother that's also. But the point is, if you're telling me that the eggs are also contributed to by the male, which fertilizes the female, well then, so what's the problem over here? And the answer is, because that Mishnah with the Vishovin is talking about where these are eggs that the chicken developed just by warming itself in the ground, meaning parthenogenesis, where it produced eggs without being with a male. Most commercial eggs we buy nowadays are like that, which is why technically we're going to talk later in the Masechta, for example, actually I think we're going to talk about it mainly in a different Masechta. We're going to talk about blood spots and eggs. I think it comes up peripherally in our Masechta, but technically, you know, we were always accustomed to, you find a blood spot on an egg, you throw out the whole egg. Mi'ikra din, there's a difference among other things. In that regard, there's a few different differences, and one of the distinctions is actually whether the egg has been fertilized by a male and are therefore going to eventually produce a chick or not. So the point is, you have eggs that can be formed like that without a male being involved. Well, then there's no zebazagodin. So then you can say that with an egg of a trefa, it's going to be also. But a meimer can still say, when you have eggs that are fertilized by a male, then you have zebazagodin. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Ela hoditznan. Okay, but what about this that we learn in a Mishnah? Actually, it's a Tanya, it says on the side, it's supposed to be a Braisa. Vlad trefa. So what about the baby of a trefa animal? So again, you have an animal that became a trefa, and now afterwards it gave birth. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Lo Yikrav Gabi Mizbeach. Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to offer that baby on the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yeshua says you are allowed to offer it on the Mizbeach. Now, Trefa itself, of course, you're not allowed to offer on the Mizbeach, but here we're talking about as far as the baby. So Rabbi Yeshua says you are allowed to. So, but my commissary, what's the underlying argument? Must be, we're talking about Bishnitrefa, all of a slave Ibra. We must be talking about where the animal became Trefa and then became pregnant. So now you have the Machlokas would be. This is Ebbe Zagodim business. Rabbi Eliezer saw a zev as a godim also. Rabbi Eliezer would hold that zev as a godim is also, and therefore it doesn't matter that the father animal, which is perfectly mutter, which didn't become trefa, helped produce this baby. It wouldn't matter. It would be also. Rabbi Yeshua saw a zev as a godim mutter. Rabbi Yeshua would hold that a case like that is mutter, and therefore the baby is mutter to offer on the mizbeach. So if you're going to say that that's the meaning of the machlokas ad miflugi legavaya, then why are they only arguing about whether you can bring it as a korban miflugi lehediot? They should argue whether you're allowed to eat it or not. So the point of the question is, what are you telling me The fact that Amemar is saying again that when do we say that Beitzas Trefa is also when there's no Zeb Zagodim, implying that when it's Zeb Zagodim, then it would be fine. But now, with this Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, if it's a matter of Zeb Zagodim, then why are we only talking about offering them? So the Ran explains the flow of the Gemara is as follows. Without a memo, we would say that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are in fact arguing where it was pregnant when it became trefa. So we would hold the uber is not yerach ima; it's not considered part of the baby, so therefore it's mutter. And Rabbi Eliezer would say it's possible to offer on the mizbeach because if it's born from a trefa, then it's no good. Rabbi Yeshua would say that it's mutter. But now our point on Meimar that we're talking about Zev is a Gerdim, then Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's also even to a Hediot, as we find other examples where he says that. So then why would the Machlokas be presented as far as a Korban? So therefore, to the flow of the Gemara, doesn't that demonstrate that a Meimar's distinction is not valid, and we don't say it's a matter of Zev is a Gerdim? And the answer is, the reason why the Braisa presents it as being a machloka specifically about a korban is to tell you how far Rabbi Yeshua goes after the lagavoya nami shori that he would hold it's mutter even for a korban. Now, if it's mutter for a korban, necessarily it must also be mutter to eat, because we have a general rule which we've learned over and over in Zvachim and Menachas that if something is also to eat, then it's also to bring as a korban. So if Rabbi Yeshua holds that you're allowed to bring it as a korban, no question, he holds you allowed to eat it. And therefore, so we're mentioning that in the Braisa because we want to tell you how far Rabbi Yeshua goes in being matter it. But that wouldn't show, in other words, that wouldn't show that in fact maybe Rabbi Eliezer would in fact hold in keeping with his opinion of Zev Zagurim, then in fact it would be also altogether. It would be a polar opposite machlaga. Eliezer would hold it's also even for a regular person to eat, and Rabbi Yeshua, on the contrary, would hold it's mutter even to bring as a korban. So the Gemara says, okay, but if that's the case, then why don't we instead then in that case, why don't we instead present the machlokas about whether a regular person can eat it? And that would tell you how far Rabbi Eliezer goes that he says that even to a hediyot it's ulcer. And the answer is, as the Gemara says, in some places, we would always rather show how far the one who's matir is ready to go be matir. Rashi explains in the Gemara in Beitza, because if you present how far the one who holds it also, how far he goes, you could say, you know what, because he wants to be machmir, because he's not sure. But when you say the one who's matir, we allow, and we say he's matir, even in that case, it shows he's definitely very, very sure of his opinion, and allows it in all cases. So koyach de hetera or deflay, we would rather mention the koyach of heter. And then we would say moridim beitzas treifa dasura. So then we would, the bottom line is when the braisa had said that they agreed by an egg of a treifa bird shasura, that it would be also, that would be like Amema said before, but the safna me'ara is where the egg was produced just by friction with the ground. In other words, just it stimulated itself to produce eggs without a male being involved. The chad godim, who then there's only one cause of the eggs, and then there's no zerzeh godim. So in other words, we can say that in fact we would say that so therefore that brings us back to our Meimah's din. The first clutch of eggs that were in the chicken when it became Shefa, there's no zebzeh godim. They were already being produced. They were already in the bird's body, and therefore when it becomes Shefa, then they become Shefa along with it. But later on when it produces eggs, we have to see if those eggs are fertilized ones, then zev is a gerdim, and therefore it would be mutter. Not fertilized, then there's no zev is a gerdim, it's only the chicken, and therefore they would be also. Okay. So all that is one explanation. Now, then the Gemara continues, Rav Acha, Sofalak, Rav Acha by Yaakov. Now, though, on the other hand, we have Rav Acha, who holds like Rav Acha by Yaakov, who said, now at the bottom of the previous Omer, Rav Acha by Yaakov had said that Yatshefer is in fact able to even give birth. So Rav Acha holds like Rav Acha by Yaakov Masni Lidam Meimah Kedam Moran. So therefore, he learns what Amema said. Like we said, it is perfectly possible for a bird after it became Shefa to develop a new clutch of eggs and lay them, and therefore we have to consider whether we have to distinguish between the first clutch of eggs and any subsequent ones, and between whether any subsequent ones were fertilized by a male or not. However, the Gemara continues, Ravina lois sovala kid Rav Acha by Yaakov. Ravina disagrees with Rav Acha by Yaakov. He holds Shreifa any Eledes. He holds, like an opinion that we said before, similar to Shreifa, Kosha any Eledes, that a Shreifa is not going to be able to give birth. In the case of a bird, is not going to be able to produce eggs. And therefore, Amema learns the whole discussion differently. So he learns Amema's statement. He learns the following. Let's go over the whole discussion again and see what Ravina's version of it would be. First of all, we're talking about eggs of a Suffolk Trefa. So not like in the first version where we were talking about Vade Trefa. We're only talking about a Suffolk Trefa. The Shichla Kama, the eggs from the first clutch. Machin and Lahu, we have to keep them around and wait and see if we figure out whether the hen was trefa or not. Because again, the fact that it lays those eggs doesn't mean if it already had eggs developing inside its body, then it'll still be able to lay them even after it became trefa. So that first clutch of eggs we have to set aside. We have to hold on to them. Ihodra v'tana. If then we see that the hen is able to then produce a new clutch of eggs, Shaoyan, then the first group will be mutter, because now it shows in retrospect that the bird wasn't trefa. So there are different opinions among achronim. Do we mean that only that it produces the eggs but doesn't lay them yet, or do we mean that it actually lays them, or does it mean that it actually lays them as well? In other words, the question would be basically, can a trefa even produce eggs inside its body, or could it just can't carry them full term? That's what we were talking about before. As far as an animal, whether a trefa would be able to carry full term, or whether it wouldn't even be able to become pregnant at all. So again, it's a suffix tereifa. You have to keep the first batch around, ihodra v'tana, and if it produces a new batch, shalya, and then the first group will be mutar v'iloya, and if not, asiron, then they will be osir. So now, in this version, esver Rav Ashi la'meimer, in this second version, then, also Rav Ashi asks la'meimer, what about the Mishnah that says, umoidim v'beitas tereifa sh'asura, that says that they agree, Rav Eliezer and Rav Yeshua, according to Rashi, v'shama v'shil, according to Tosfos, the beitas tereifa, by the egg of a tereifa sh'asura, that will be osir, and she god be isir, because it grew the Isser, because it grew inside a chicken that was Osser. And again, Amalei, so according to this, Maimon would answer him, Hossam, but the Shichla Kama, not like in the first version where we distinguish between Safna Ba'ara, whether the chicken produced eggs by parthenogenesis or whether it produced them by being fertilized by a male. Now in the second version, we're saying that the first batch are Osser. Because God loved the Isser, because they grew inside the bird after it became Osser. So the question is, in Godla, what do you mean by the expression? You're saying in the Baisa, because they grew the Isser, and now they didn't grow, the entire growth of the egg wasn't the Isser. Gumra, mean by it should say the word Gumra, that they were completed the Isser, that the final completion of the egg, an egg takes 21 days to finish being produced inside the bird's body, so then it means the last couple of days of it were done the Isser. So fine, Tony Gomra. Fine, you can say that that's what the Braisa means. When it says Godla, it really means Gomra. It means that it was completed. So then according to that, then, so the distinction wouldn't be between unfertilized and fertilized eggs. The distinction would just be between the first batch and the second. But Elohod Ditznan, what about this that we learn in a Mishnah, or again, Ditania that we learn in a Braisa, Vlad Trefa, a baby of a Trefa animal, Rabbi Eliezer Omer LaYikrav LaGavim Mizbeach, Rabbi Eliezer says you can't offer it on the Mizbeach, Rabbi Yeshua Omer LaYikrav, and Rabbi Yeshua says you could, but Maikom Mifugi, so again, we would have to assume, what is the Macholikus talking about? The She'ibril of a Seif Nitrifa. Here we would assume the other way around. Before we were assuming that it means that the animal became Trefa and only then became pregnant. If we're now going to follow the opinion that a trefa animal is not able to have babies, then necessarily we can't be talking about it became trefa and then became pregnant and had a baby, because then that would be impossible. So we have to be talking about, therefore, that it was pregnant and then became trefa. Rabbi Eliezer Sava Uber Yerach Imayu, which then we would say Rabbi Eliezer holds that the baby is considered a part of its mother, and therefore when the mother became trefa, so did the baby. And Rabbi Yeshua would hold that the baby is not considered part of the mother, it's considered a separate thing. Well, if that's the case, then again, we have to ask the question, if that's the case, then first of all, we're going to have to figure out then what would be the difference between it and a chicken, but more to the point, also, if so, then again, we have the question like before, instead of arguing about the case, whether you can bring it as a korban, in that case, they should be arguing whether you yourself are allowed to eat it. If that, in fact, is the case, if we're going to assume that a trefa is not able to successfully become pregnant and give birth, then the machloikus would be, in other words, that when it became trefa with the baby already in its womb, and we're gonna say according to Eliezer, not only it's also for a korban, it's also to eat outright, because at this point it's considered the baby of a trefa, then why are they arguing only in the case of a korban, implying as though Eliezer says it would be mutter to eat? And again, the answer, like we said before, to tell you how far Rabbi Yeshua goes, that he says not only mutter for to eat, but it's even mutter for a korban. So again, the question is, again, why wouldn't we instead present the machloikas about whether you and every person can eat it, and tell you how far Rabbi Yezer goes, that not only you can't bring it as a korban, but you can't even eat it. And the answer is, like we said before, the answer is because we would rather highlight how far the one who's matter is going and being matter, like we said before, because that shows how certain he is of his opinion that he would even declare it mutter to bring as a korban and not even just to eat. Where there you could say, if he doesn't allow it as a korban, maybe it's because of a chumra, but when you say he allows it even to be brought as a korban, shows that he's very certain of his opinion. And again, the Ran explains, if we said that a trefa is able to give birth, then fine. We would say the case was that it became trefa and then it became pregnant, and the question, and we'd say, zev is a gur mutter, and it's only also to bring as a korban, because again, you have it was formed, it was created in the womb of a trefa, and it's not appropriate to bring as a korban. But now that we're saying that we're talking about became pregnant and then Shreifa, and if the question is Uber Yerachimayhu, then the question would be why we don't mention the point that Rabbi Eliezer allowed us asses it even to eat. And the answer is because we'd rather highlight how far Rabbi Yeshua goes in being accurate, even for a korban. So then when the Braisa finishes off, Moidim Vadeh with the Shreifa Shasura. Now, on the other hand, when we're saying that they do agree, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, or both the Shama and the Sillel agree, an egg of a treifa bird, that it's also would be b'shich l'kama. Again, we're talking about the first batch of eggs. My time a gufahu, because once they're inside the body, and they're still forming inside it, they're even still, they're still attached to it with didim, they're still, while they're in the process of formation, they're attached to its body, therefore they're considered part of its body, and therefore when the mother becomes treifa, then the eggs become treifa as well. So that has implications not only as far as treifas, it has implications. If you shech the bird and you find incompletely formed eggs inside it, then the eggs are considered to a certain extent fleishigs. Tosfos actually says in that case, and it would mean that if it's not attached by gidim anymore, once they're already completely formed and all it needs to do is lay them, then in fact we might say that in fact they're not considered also at that point. Therefore such eggs would be mutter. So the Gemara says v'hilchasa. Now the bottom line halacha b'zocher kol shnei masachodesh. When it comes to a male animal that it's a suffix treifa, we have to see whether it lives for 12 months. If it lives for 12 months, then we don't need to check it any further, and then it's fine. The nekeva, when it comes to a female animal, you could also keep it for 12 months, but you don't have to. Kolsha any lettuce, if it doesn't give birth, then you have reason to assume it's treifa, but if it does give birth, then you are able to assume that it's kosher. So again, then it would mean the machlokas or Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua that we were saying before would be talking about where it became pregnant and afterwards became treifa, because again, we're saying that a treifa animal cannot give birth. So again, as long as the egg or the embryo is in the mother and becomes treifa, then automatically it would become treifa with it. So Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss there may be differences in halacha in this connection. Sometimes we say uber yerach imoyhu, sometimes not. One logic would be that when it comes to treifas, the mother and the baby have bios individually of their own, and therefore you could say that just because the mother became treifa doesn't automatically make the baby animal treifa as well, as opposed to by other cases, for example, as far as a case of a cow that gores, where there we say the unborn baby inside it is considered to have joined in the damage as well. There you could say. So there we talk about that, in effect, in a certain sense, the baby did in fact help to in the growing as well. It increases the mother's mass and therefore is considered part of the growing as well. Okay, so that's the bottom line halacha is that a suffix treifa, you can keep it around for 12 months and see what happens, and in the case of a female, you can wait until it gives birth and see what happens. Like I said, the poskim are not really entirely comfortable with this idea of keeping it around, because there's a very high chance that you may forget that there's a suffix over here and then come to eat it. So I think one distinction is, for example, whether you're talking individual animal or whether you're talking about, let's say, a whole herd of animals. If you have a whole herd of animals that are all suffix treifa, and you want to keep them for 12 months, then not necessarily would you be able to do that. The Ramah brings yesh machmir and oid. There are poskim who are machmir, and any time you have to leave it for 12 months, there's a concern of takola that there may be a stumbling block that somebody may not realize that it's a suffix treifa. And therefore it would be a problem. And he says this is the minhag in our country, so in practice then Amos says we can't rely on this 12-month business because there's too much of a problem, from the potential of takala that you may not realize that it's suffix ulcer, and then you're gonna go and shecht it and eat it. And he talks about even what about if you sell it to a goy, but the problem is you may resell it to a yid, so it's not so simple. In this connection, talking about a treifa not being able to live for 12 months, the Gemara brings a similar concept. Amar Rav Huna, Kol Bria, Shein Bar Etzem, any creature that doesn't have bone, so worms, insects, all kinds of invertebrates like that, any Meskayim, Yud Beis Chodesh, will not be able to live 12 months. What's the relevance of that lahalacha? Amar Papa, Shmami Nami Rav Huna, we see then from what Rav Huna says, Chod Amar Shmuel, now when we talk about, we're going to learn at the end of our parak, we're going to learn about dinim, of what kind of insect, of what cases of insects, also and mutter, one basic thing we're going to talk about over there is there's a difference whether a fruit or vegetable became wormy while it was attached to the ground versus after it was detached. After it was detached, you have more of a heter for worms or other invertebrates that grow inside it because then they're not considered, it's not considered al ha'aretz. The pasuk malati, asheretz, asheretz, al ha'aretz, and this is not al ha'aretz. So therefore, so Shmuel says, so when we say, when Shmuel says, if a pumpkin became wormy while it was attached to the ground, Shmuel says asura, then it would be asur because now this is sheretz asheretz ala oretz. This is considered a creature that swarmed on the ground because the fruit is attached to the ground. Tosfos later on in the Perek discusses that maybe it's only a problem if it moves around in the if it moves around in it, which is called sheretz. Maybe if it stays in one place, it's not also. Other Rishonim disagree. In any case, so now Rav Papa says as the relevance of what Rav Huna is saying about these creatures not being able to live for 12 months. So he's saying if the pumpkin became wormy while it was attached to the ground, your osur, that would only be. We can learn from that, though. On the other hand, Hani Tamri Dekada. On the other hand, when you have dates that are being kept in a jug, and you find that they're wormy in it, if they've been in the jug for 12 months or more, then they're mutter, because now it means that those are for sure not worms in these fruits when they were picked, because they couldn't have lived for that long. So therefore, it means that they developed in the fruit afterwards. Today and such things would be mutter because not sure that's all that's. Now, why he mentions Zafka dates? Is the Ran and the Rosh explained because those very commonly become wormy. So now it would sound like you don't even need to check them because even if you find worms in them, it's not a problem. On the other hand, the Maharam Shif understands that even Rapapa is only allowing you to find live ones. Then fine, those for sure were formed after they were picked. But if you find dead ones, then who knows? There might be dead ones that were in fact in it when it was picked, and those would be also, and they remain also even after it's picked. Tosfos gives a different girsa over here, not Tami Dekada, which means that they're in a jug. Tosfos brings a girsa. Dekorim, which means that they develop wounds. Either way, in other words, the point is, in other words, that we'd be saying that Rapapa is saying that if you find wounds in them, or according to Maharam Shif, live wounds, then you don't need to worry about it because then those definitely developed in it after the fact. Now, there is a point, by the way, in Halacha, you have something called Bal Tishaktsu. You're not allowed to do things that are disgusting, so therefore you might, to not eat them would be something else. You're not allowed to eat them on the ground, those grounds, because they're disgusting. Nothing to do with the Halachas of eating worms, but at least we're saying that from the point of view of the Issu to eat worms, and those wouldn't necessarily apply. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Omar Rav, less Vaka, you never find a baka which is more than a day old. A baka is a little kind of stinging insect like a gnat or something. You never find one that's a day old. Their lifespan is less than a day. Unless didra bas shata, and you never find, he continues, a fly that lives a year old, because we're saying that any invertebrate doesn't live more than 12 months. A fly may be long lived, but if not, it doesn't live more than 12 months. Omelette popola baia, and the symbol meaning, it means exactly what it sounds like. Or Benio Yoda explains those gemmas, and it also that the gnat and the fly represent two different types of Yetzihara. The fly, he says the baka, the gnat, would represent the Yetzihara, like it stings a person and tries to convince him to do Averis. The fly then would represent the Satan, which is Mepatrig, which accuses him in Shemayim. So then the idea would be that the Yetzihara, every day have a new Yetzihara. So therefore, so in that sense, metaphorically, it doesn't live longer than a day. And then on the other hand, there's no fly more than a year old, because the Satan, every year, Yom Kippur, the Satan loses his ability to be able to accuse us. So therefore, in effect, after Yom Kippur, the Satan is, so to speak, recreated. So omelette popola baya. So the papa says, baya, how could you say a gnat doesn't live longer than a day? Well, Amri Inchi, there's a popular expression that people say, Shev Shni, for 7 years, Imra Baksa Mibaka. The female gnat grilled against the male one and didn't want anything to do with him. She was angry at him for 7 years. The Omrele, she said to him, Chazise Laba Mechuza, I saw a person from Mechuza. Hosea is a city in Babel. We find in many places in Shas that they were very, very rich and well fed. So Bar Mechuza means somebody who's very healthy and well fed. So like a gnat would get a nice meal out of him, basically. So she says, I saw a person from Mechuza, this Socha B'maya, this guy had gone and bathed in the water, the Stolik, and he came out of the water, the Ichrich B'sidin, and he wrapped himself in a towel to dry off and warm up, for Osiris Alei, and then the female says to the male, says to her husband, you landed on this guy, Umosis Mine, and you sucked his blood, and you didn't inform me. So like, I missed out on a good meal. So the point is, in other words, the Papa says, so you see in this popular expression that people talk about them being on the outs with one another for seven years. So what are you telling me, they only live a day? Marsha points out, okay, this is a popular expression, fine, but it's not stam a joke. Marsha explains it's a moshel of an isha ra, a bad wife who like tries to help her husband and try to abet her husband in harming other people. Sometimes he does the crime by himself and doesn't tell her, and she's mad because she didn't get to join in it as well. So like here, she's mad at her husband, the male gnat, that you sucked this guy's blood, you committed the crime, and you didn't even give me an opportunity to join in as well. Ben Yoda goes into a long thing about it. Also, it refers to you have the male of Klippus and the female of Klippus, and it talks about you have, in other words, like the female of Klippus sees that Yisturim come on a tzaddik. He understands that the Bar Mechuza over here represents a great tzaddik, and figures that why didn't I have a chance to participate in it as well? So you didn't tell me how you were able to dominate him and bring your sword on him, and therefore, like, she holds it against him. Anyway, the point is, again, Rapapa is saying this popular expression refers to them being on the outs for 7 years, which is a lot longer than a day. Omale, Abaya answers Rapapa, Velitaich, according to your svara that you're asking the question, what about, I'll give you a different example of a popular expression like that. Choda Amri Yishi, people also say, Shikin money parzala tolele le baka bakurnase. The baka, this gnat, has on its stinger, 60 mana of iron. A mana is a weight of a couple of pounds. 60 mana, okay, sometimes the Gemara uses 60 as an exaggerated number, so it doesn't even necessarily mean exactly 60. But it means, in other words, that whatever it's the weight of 100 shekels, so it's a couple of pounds, and 60 mana, that would be a lot more than that. And there's a popular expression that a gnat has 60 mana of iron hanging from his stinger, meaning, in other words, the sting is very powerful. So you have to ask Mika, how could that be? How much does a gnat weigh already? A lot less than one mana, let alone 60. Ella the money did who? Obviously, then in this popular expression, when we speak of monas, we mean monas scaled to the size of a gnat. In other words, a gnat would be whatever 100,000, let's say, the size of a person. So 60, we think of 60 money in human terms, and then scale it down to the size of a gnat. And in terms of that, you can say that it has that on its finger. Chachanami, the Shnei Din Hu, the same way, this popular expression about the 7 years, means years, 7 years, scaled down to the lifespan of a gnat. Given that, so let's say a person, an average person, lives 70 years, a gnat, we're saying, lives less than a day, so scale down, what would be the equivalent of 7 years, for a person? In gnat terms, would be a few minutes. So for a few minutes, then the popular expression says they were on the outs because of this. Maharshal says the 60 mana of iron hanging on his finger refers to the effect of a Baal Lashon Hara. It seems like Lashon Hara is not that, it doesn't mean that much, but here you see that's very, very serious, as if it was being hit with a weight of 60 mana of iron. Then Hoyada continuing with this matter of the clippers, of the male and female clippers, so he explains, in other words, that the 60 is like a protection against the clippers, as we find, for example, 60 letters in Birkas Koyanim, and Shloima had 60 mighty men surrounding his bed, so that represents, in other words, that there's what to protect a person, gives a person what to protect himself with from the sting of the gnat representing the clippers that try to dominate him and wound him, the Gashmias of Rukhnis. Okay, the point is, in other words, Rabbi says, don't be bothered by the fact that we're saying gnat lives less than a day. And here you have this popular expression that 7 years means 7 years, it means seven gnat years. Okay. Talking further about tefachos, the Gemara says, it's not awesome. We learn in a Mishnah in Bechoros, talking about mumim of animals, behem balas hei raglayim, if an animal has five legs, or she'en la'el shalosh, or if it has only three legs, how is a mum, then this is considered a mum, and therefore if it's an animal for a korban, in general, you can't bring it, and if it's a bechor, then it means that, then again, you can't bring it as a korban, meaning you're now allowed to shecht it and eat it anywhere you want. You don't have to give it. You give it to the kohen, and the kohen shechts and eats it wherever he wants. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rapuna leshanu el shachos yaseh biyad." Now that would only apply if the extra leg or the missing leg is one of the front legs. Here we talked about before that if the animal is missing a front leg, then it doesn't matter so much. We said if it was dislocated or even if it was moved together, then the animal is still kosher. So by the same token, then if it has an extra one or missing one over there, then it would also be fine. It would be mum, but it's not, the animal is not tefachah. But if it's missing or has an extra back leg, then it would be trefa. So when it's missing, trefa nami havia, then not only would it be a mum, it would actually be trefa. My time would call yesu, not to domi, because I have a rule. So when it's three, then we said a leg is missing, and that's enough to make it trefa. When instead you have an extra one, and we have a rule, as we learned before, called yeso kenotel domi, whenever you have an extra one of a vital organ, it's considered as though it was removed, and therefore in effect you have, and therefore it's considered the equivalent of not having an extra leg. The Rashash brings a point that the idea is, in other words, there's a certain amount of life force that has to be in every limb of the body. When you have two of the same one, then it means, in other words, it's split up between the two of them, and therefore it doesn't really work, and neither one is strong enough to be able to do its job, basically. So the Gemara tells how chevsa to have a latarki sanya divi. So it happened once there was an animal that had two sanya divi. We talked about a few dachim ago in our perek. We were talking about sanya divi. Rashi had given two explanations over there. Rashi's preferred explanation. We're showing him, by the way, have a number of other explanations what this idea of kol yesa kenotel domi. Rashi basically says it's as if like they cancel each other out. Because you have an extra one, they cancel each other out, and it's considered as though it's missing. The Ramban has a different explanation. It means that it's as though it was amputated. So in other words, what happened is that now you have basically, that's when we talk about the back leg, which is supposed to be, again, it's supposed to be in the hip socket. So now you have an extra one over there. So now you have two of them together. So in effect, the extra one has been removed, and then along with it, the place of attachment over there, and therefore it's safer. And then Ashba says that it's also as if the second one was off, but whatever the case, the point is that if one of them is removed, then the other one is going to be dislocated as well. So how Huchev said to have a lost Tanya Sauta Divi, Tanya Sanya Divi. It happened that an animal had two Sanya Divi. We talked about earlier in the parak on Nunam and Bez what the Sanya Divi is. Rashi had given two explanations, but his preferred explanation is that it's the cecum. It's a pouch, a blind pouch that hangs off the intestines, similar to appendix in a person, much larger. It's part of the digestive system. So now this animal had two sanya divi. I saw the Ravina, so they brought it to Ravina to ask the Shaila B'tar from Rav Huna, and he declared it Terefa based on what Rav Huna says, because the idea is that now you have as though there's no sanya divi at all, and then that's considered an essential organ, because we talked about before that that's according to, we said that was one possibility, is that it's a keres atnimis. That's considered the inner keres, and therefore even a small hole in it would make it Terefa, how much more so over here where it would be considered as though it was removed altogether. So, again, you have the different svaris as the idea one is removed and automatically you're going to have a hole in the other one, etc. So, yeah. However, the Gemara says, v'shafchamadadi, however, if they pour one into another, in other words, if they're attacked in such a way where the content of one can now pour directly into the other, then the animal is kosher, because then it's basically considered like one sanya divi, which just happens to have two lobes in it, not two separate ones. Another story, the Gemara says, I hear also talked about today. First, Ahu Gufsa, there was a channel of flesh. Dabanafka, sort of like an intestine. Dabanafka mi bekasi lobula, that went from the besakosis to the hemsis. As we learned before, the besakosis and the hemsis are the second and third stomachs. And there was a channel between them, not the regular. There was always a channel between them that the food eventually that gets digested and the besakosis eventually passes into the hemsis. But here there was another one. So Ravashi the mitzvah for us, Ravashi thought to say that it's Terefa. Because, in effect, again, you have this as a called Yosef Kanot. When you have something extra, it's considered as though it's missing. However, Rav Huna Mar Bar Chia said to Ravashi, this is not a problem. All these animals that graze out in the meadows, or a different explanation of how you have healthy animals, have this kind of thing. It's a normal thing for them to have this kind of channel, and therefore it's not considered a problem. An interesting thing, Sifas Kol explains that this channel is actually when a baby animal is drinking milk from its mother, the milk doesn't need to go through the whole digestive process, doesn't need to go through the keres and then the besakosis, etc., like regular food, because it doesn't need to be chewed into cut and everything. So therefore, Hashem created in newborn animals, you have a special channel over there that goes directly into the huvlila, into the third stomach, and then water is extracted from it over there, water and fats and whatever are extracted from it, and then it's passed along to the next stomach to be completely broken down and digested. And therefore, so now Rav Huna Mar is telling Ravashi, this kind of thing is a normal thing. Let's say for this is part of what Hashem created in baby animals. So of course, maybe Ravashi until now had never seen it, because in a mature animal that closes up here, it was still left. But nevertheless, Rav Huna Mar tells him it's still a normal thing. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Ahu Gufsa, there was another example of such a channel. It was going from the base choices to the keres, from the second stomach to the first. Again, there is, of course, something between them that connects them. But here, there was a pathological thing that connects them. Ravashi thought to declare it kosher, because, like we said, maybe this is a normal thing as well. But Rav Oshia says, are you trying to weave them all together in one web? You can't compare. Just because you have one, Rashi explains that speech is called weaving, because you weave words together. So you can't, just because you have one case where it's kosher, hey, Ithmar, where it was said, then it was said, in the case of where it goes from the second to the third stomach, hey, that's a normal thing, it wasn't said, this kind of thing, in fact, would be considered like an extra intestine, and there we would say the rule of kol yesek kenotel domi, that when you have an extra one, it's considered like it's missing. And therefore, as though something is missing, or as though you have a hole, according to the different explanation of Rishonim. Okay. Speaking of extra pipes over there, of extra intestines, so the Gemara brings in the connection. Heid Nosen Bar Shila, Tabachaya de Tzipori, Nosen Bar Shila, who was the head shochet of Tzipori, gave testimony lifnei Rebbe, in front of Rebbe. Rebbe lived his last few years in the city of Tzipori, so this Nosen Bar Shila testified, and who was the head shochet of the city, testified in front of him. When you have two intestines that come out together from the animal, so normally the intestines start coming after the cava, after the fourth stomach, you have the intestines. First, you have the duodenum, and then it goes to the intestines, which are coeleus. Here you have that they come at two different intestines, two different large intestines start coming out from different parts of the stomach. In particular, Rashi says we're talking about two hadura dekanta, two places where the intestines coil one around the other. Now she eats shreifa. So this shreifa, Nosson Bashila said that kind of thing is shreifa because again, kol yosef v'notol. Uchnegden, but if shreifa, but he said on the other hand, with a bird, that kind of thing would be kosher. Because they had the Kabbalah, but that's how it is. Just because sometimes you have like that, you don't find it very commonly, but nevertheless, they knew that it's possible and that it's kosher. Rashi gives a second explanation because anyway, we learned before about the digestive system of a bird. You have the esophagus, then you have the zephek, the crop that we talked about, that pouch in the middle of the neck where the food stays temporarily. Then you have it continues from there as a narrow esophagus. And then it goes into the gizzard. So the point is, in other words, as it is in a bird, you have in effect two different things of intestines, one going into the gizzard and one out of it. And therefore it can be kosher. However, the braisa continues. When would that apply? That with double intestine, the animal is safer. Shiyotzin mishnei makom, they come out from two different places. For example, one at the end of it and one in the middle. Our yotzin mamakom echad, but if they come out from the same place, one right next to the other, the colon ad ke etzba, and then they end within an etzba. They become an etzba space. They join together. Cheder, then the animal would be kosher. So what does that mean? Pligi barav ami v'rabasi. So Rabbi and Rabasi disagree what exactly that means when we said if it finishes within an etzba. One says, like what we just said, that would only be if they get joined together. So you have it starts out in two different places, but then within an etzba's length, within about a fraction of an inch, they join together, then fine, the animal is kosher. But otherwise it would be cheder. The Kadam or the other one between Rav Ami and Rav Asi, even if joined back together, nevertheless the animal is still kosher. So it sounds like it means, in other words, even if they never rejoin, it would be kosher. So the Gemara says, according to the opinion that when they rejoin together, then it's kosher. And so now we understand the mission. The Braisa is saying if they join together within an etzva. But if you say that even if they don't rejoin together, my ad ketzva, then what's this ad ketzva? And the answer is ad ke'etzba milamata. It means up to an etzba from the end. It does have to be, in other words, according to that opinion, they can be side by side next to one another, but as long as at the end, as long as before it reaches the rectum where the animals defecate, that then they join back together. And they join back together in order to be one thing. So in other words, according to that way of looking at it, even if, so fine, you have two different small intestines, two different colons and all that, but at least it has to join together within an etzba of the rectum in order for the animal to be able to eliminate its waste properly. There are different other understandings among Rishonim that it means that if you have a little blind sac that sticks out of the intestines, then it can be kosher as long as it's not an etzba in length. In birds, that kind of thing is very common. First of all, in a bird, it's very common actually to have two cecums. We said before, the sanyadibi, the cecum, by an animal, it's not normal to have two, but by birds, it's actually normal to have two. So that would also explain what we mean when we said if there were two in a bird, it would be kosher. Kenegin ba'if kshera. But in addition, also, you sometimes have, along the intestines in a bird, sometimes have little pockets over there, it's called a diverticulum, it's called Meckel's diverticulum, a little thing where you have a little sac, a little branch of the intestines that branches off and forms a little sac over there attached to the intestines. That kind of thing also very often becomes infected and punctured. That's another one of the things they commonly check for trypanosomes among birds, because it's again one of those things where there's a common risk, a common something going wrong, which therefore they have to check. Next, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda Oimim Nitlan Noitza Psula. Rabbi Yehuda had said that if the downy feathers of a bird are gone, then it's possible. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel, Amar Dabar Echad. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel are therefore in effect both saying the same thing, that the feathers are considered so much part of the bird's body that they, said Rabbi Yehuda is going to consider it like the skin, Rabbi Shmuel is basically saying the same thing, that it's considered like the skin. Rabbi Yehuda hadamoran, that Rabbi Yehuda says, if the down is gone, then the brood is safer. Rabbi Shmuel, where do we see Rabbi Shmuel saying that? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel amar noitzim mitzterefes. Rabbi Shmuel holds that the feathers combine together with the brood. Rashi explains it. Here we have the whole matter of pigul, that if you have in mind when you're checking a korban, or in the case of a brood, when you're doing malika of a korban, that you're going to eat a kazak of it, chutzas manoi, then it becomes pigul. So now Rabbi Shmuel says that the feathers, the downy feathers, will combine together. So if he has in mind to eat a kazayas partially of flesh and partially of down, then that would be considered pigul, and he's chai of kardis. That's according to Rashi. According to Tosfos, rather, we're referring to a case of Tumas Oichlin. We've learned a number of times already about a dead kosher bird that's metame a person when he swallows it. So therefore, does the down count towards that, does it count actually for Tumas Oichlin in general? The flesh of a bird is going to be food. It's going to be metame. And if you have a kabeza, then it'll be able to be metame other food. So now, do the feathers count together with that? And Rabbi Shmuel says they do. So you see that Rabbi Shmuel holds that the feathers are the equivalent of the skin, which is the same as Rabbi Hordeh is saying. However, Rabbi says not necessarily so. Maybe there was a difference. You know what Rabbi Hordeh is saying over here? The down counts like the skin, because as far as Tzefa, the Lecha Midi to Megan Allah, the Aleh, there's nothing protecting the bird anymore. So therefore, so it's going to die. But as far as Igul or Tumas Oichlin, so Rashi had a girsa if guli, which would mean that we're talking about pigul. According to Tosfos, rather the girsa would be in an aguni, as far as shomer, as far as it being considered to protect the flesh, which we're going to talk about later in the Masechta. We're going to talk about that not only, for example, a fruit natame, so is able to become tame, so is its peel, because the shomer, it protects the flesh of the fruit. Similarly, the skin protects the flesh, and so forth. So when it comes to being a shomer, not necessarily would it be hard to hold. Maybe he holds like the Rabbanon, it's not considered a shomer, because you don't usually, Tosfos points out, so if we're talking about, so whether we're talking about pigul or whether we're talking about Tumas Oichlin, you don't usually put, when you're putting meat of a brood away, you don't usually put it together away with the feathers, you don't want it to become dirty. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda may well hold that when it comes to those halachas, a pigul or of Tumas Oichlin, then the feathers wouldn't necessarily count. And vice versa, Rabbi Shmuel is only talking about as far as becoming pigul, as far as Tumas Oichlin. But when it comes to Tereka, Rabbi Shmuel may well hold that it doesn't really do so much to protect the bird. Its skin will mostly protect it, and we don't care, therefore, if it lost its down. So not necessarily do Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel agree on the halacha as far as the down being gone makes it safer or not. So again, as we talked about before, in Shulchan Aruch it says that the down being missing doesn't really make a difference. Although that Amar says that we should be choshish if all of the feathers that there are the alamur and the kolba the Amar brings do hold that it is also if the feathers fell out, and Amar says if they all fell out then you should be machmir, but again not if it fell because the brood is particularly fat. Okay.